Tomorrow, the Flood. From There Is Nothing to Fear by Santiside. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 5. Caroline Rappaport. Reptiles of the Earth. Caroline Rappaport maintained a stately, elegant office, expansive but not extravagant, imperious without being imperial. Two cushioned chairs grown from living birch wood were positioned before the marble fireplace, upon whose mantel were a couple of potted tobacco plants and a painted marble bust of Proserpine Rappaport, her mother and her predecessor as consul for the popular Unitarian Party that Caroline now served. It was her home ground, and she had never felt vexed within it, till now. The tomato pie she'd eaten earlier wasn't sitting right in her stomach, but Caroline thought that her unease had more to do with the guest she was entertaining. Tom Riddle, charged by the Wizengamot as their temporary envoy to the Atlantean Commonwealth. He sat straight at his chair as if his spine had been locked in place and his dark robes gathered at his feet without form or texture, like depthless darkness. His mask was a flat surface of bone porcelain, without eyes or nose or any other feature, and his breath was the buzzing of 1,000 insects. But she couldn't and she wouldn't let it get to her. Caroline had spent most of the past few days discussing trade. Through their isolation, the British had been able to acquire various potions ingredients, alchemical reactants, and magical crafting supplies through Muggle channels, but had needed to ration materials that were restricted by the Statute of Secrecy. That had to end, and the Atlantic Commonwealth was sent to help by selling devil's breath and hide-behind hides and bored feet of sweet gum wandwood by the gross, maybe even micropotamuses, and at tariff-free rates to boot. The beauty of the deal was that it hardly mattered whether her fellow consul vetoed the legislation. If he did, then it was more fodder for the campaign trail, and if he didn't, then the industry chiefs would still remember who it was that had remembered them. But all of that was a pipe dream if Riddle didn't still feel agreeable when he returned to Britain. He didn't have the authority to sign a deal all on his own, but he could tip the balance in whichever direction that he liked.
Consul Rappaport, I place great value on my relationship with you, but I am disturbed, said Riddle, by your unwillingness to pressure your party more strongly on the issue of non-human rights.
Mr. Riddle, the popular Unitarians have supported work and residential rights for hags and vampires for longer than I've been alive, and werewolves too, Caroline said, wrapping her fingers around each other in her lap. You will find that we're ahead of the Unitarian populists in that regard on almost every facet of the issue.
But not Puckwodges or Sasquatches, Riddle said. Perhaps the Unitarian populists will prove easier to coax away from their own shortcomings than your party is from theirs. Perhaps they could be persuaded to extend the franchise to vampires, for example.
Riddle paused for a moment.
What do you support, Consul? As I recall, your mother only joined the popular Unitarians after she failed to secure a second term as Consul for the other party.
My mother experienced a political enlightenment, Caroline replied, and I share her wiser convictions.
Your family has a history of conveniently timed, how did you put it, political enlightenments,
Riddle replied.
Does the Rappaport family have many seers to its name?
Her eyes darted to the north wall, where she had hung portraits of 9 previous Rappaports, all presently bare of their usual inhabitants. Each of them, including her own mother, had served as consul at one time or another. 5 had served multiple terms, and all but 1 had switched parties at some point to do so. I was taught from an early age to admit when I'm wrong. Unfortunately, many other members of the party do not share my family's commitment to... Caroline paused to consider her words, thankful that her relatives were absent from their frames. Dear Pluto Rappaport had not exactly removed himself from the room entirely, but he had disappeared deep into a landscape painting to hunt pictured buffalo, and that was good enough.
Shameless opportunism,
Riddle suggested. Caroline allowed the comment to pass over her like water, with hardly a blink in response. Her relationship with Riddle was too important to sacrifice it for a little pride. "I would rather say continuous self-improvement," she decided. "This is a very sensitive time for the party right now, where every vote will count. We have to make sure that the general population doesn't think that we're too radical. And even some popular Unitarians are unhappy about some of your statements to, disaffected elements."
"You mean when I agreed to meet with Tanujifika?"
"Yes, that." It was bad enough that Riddle was talking about privileges for Pukwudgies in the abstract, but to actually break bread with them. "The Jifikas are all bushwhackers," Caroline said. "Terrorists," she tried. When Riddle said nothing.
"I understood you the first time,"
Riddle said.
"They called me a terrorist as well, less than 2 decades ago. Now I govern their school, and my supporters sit in their hall of power."
Caroline was quite aware of that already, just as both of them were aware that the comparison could only unsettle her. She did not need to think about the possibility of Pukwudgie bushwhackers having a voice in educational policy, or any other policy, in 20 years. "That makes your meeting with Jifika all the more concerning for some members of the Commonwealth. Citizens," Caroline emphasized, "who will vote during the intercalary at the end of this year." Riddle's shoulders shifted slightly, but he said nothing. Was that tiny shift an expression of sympathy or defiance, resignation, anger? For the umpteenth time this night, Caroline found herself cursing Riddle's inexpressive mask. It was like talking to a wall that could make or break her political fortunes. "I don't have a problem with how you've chosen to handle the goblins in your own country. But you must understand that you're dealing with an entirely different breed than the goblins that we have here. British goblins are civilized. They're a nation," Caroline said, and she fought the urge to reach for a calming draught to soothe her nerves. "But Pukwudgies are savages, with none of the economic or political sophistication that you're used to. They blew up a bridge just a week ago and killed an Oro the week before that. They boiled him alive for Jackson's sake." Riddle said nothing until the silence grew painful and Caroline was compelled to speak again. "Yes, well, perhaps it would be more fruitful to focus on the policies we were alike. The Muggleborn Adoption and Guardianship Initiative is brilliant, and I think that there's a great support for replicating it in our own country. Maybe we could even do something similar for the Pukwudgies, since their problem is primarily a lack of civilization," Caroline said. And as she considered the idea further, it became more attractive. Few families would stand to welcome a Pukwudgie into their own home, but the pecuniary colleges might sponsor group boarding houses, and it would only be reasonable to ask the Pukwudgies to perform some labor on their behalf, to develop a work ethic, to learn a trade, to compensate their benefactors, as any apprentice labored for their master. Indeed, the economic benefit alone would ensure support from her most valuable donors.
"Pukwudgies have magical parents,"
Riddle said, interrupting Caroline's thoughts. "Yes," she said, "so do hags, and you place them in foster homes anyway."
"It is not the same. Hags give their daughters voluntarily, and their daughters are typically returned just as soon as they no longer look so appetizing. But I can't help but think that the Pukwudgies would not consent to your plan."
"Maybe they won't at first," Caroline allowed. "But..."
"Design the program however you like, Consul. But if the Pukwudgies do not agree to participate in it, then that will be the end of the matter."
"Why do you care? Most goblins are hardly able to put a few sparks through a wand," Caroline countered.
"The Treaty of Chipping Clodbury stipulates that every goblin is a magical being and has the right to a wand and a place in magical society,"
Riddle said.
"It explicitly bars the British government from requiring a wand proficiency test as proof of a goblin's magical nature, and Pukwudgies, regardless of their cultural differences, are goblins."
"The Atlantic Commonwealth is not a party to Chipping Clodbury," Caroline pointed out. "That agreement isn't even legal. You might have adjusted your own laws, but the ICW has its own one, Ben.
Have the august personages of the ICW come to Britain in order to administer this law, where we do not?
No, but...
The only real thing in this world is power,
Riddle said.
If we will not enforce a wand ban, and the ICW will not enforce it against us, then there is no wand ban. There is a mink on a sheet of parchment or engravings on a plate of brass.
Would you enforce your own decree against fostering Puckwudgies?
Not as such,
Riddle said. But before Caroline could so much as smile, he continued.
Nevertheless, I counsel you to proceed carefully. My government desires to have the friendship of your own, but the goblins are their own nation, as you say, and they keep their own counsel. I have stayed their hand so far, but if you worsen the plight of their cousins, then I can only predict what they can do. Wand smuggling may well be the least of it,
he suggested, and Caroline suppressed a shudder. You couldn't possibly permit that, she exclaimed. The ICW has only tolerated this so far because the crime is limited to your own nation. But if you...
I'm sure that my government would never officially endorse an action like that, but every goblin has the right to own a wand, even if only a few have purchased one. So there would be no reason for official concern over a mass purchase. It would be a boon to our economy as well, so there would be a great amount of support for the sale, if the question were ever openly addressed.
You don't think that we would stand for that, do you? We can find other markets.
But none with as much gold as ours. Between an emboldened insurgency on one side and the promise of lucrative trade on the other, I suspect that the displeasure of your country would last no longer than 3 years. That is, no longer than it will take you to lose your own election,
Riddle said.
However, I have come to encourage and not to intimidate. I have heard that the goblins do in fact plan to skirt the wand ban. But there are so many places where they might deliver a crate of wands. Norway, Denmark, Japan, the Andes. I imagine that the Puckwudgies might be overlooked so long as some other group of goblins were thought to have a more dire need.
I take your point, Caroline said. And she paused to remind herself of the situation. Riddle was too intelligent to give heed to the insipid morals that bound lesser wizards, but his own constituents were certainly no more reasonable than her own, and even great men were less powerful than the masses en masse. They could only be controlled to the degree that they were persuaded, and though the plebeian was easy to outwit and quick to forget, one sometimes had only reason in one's hand, and that was a blade which rarely slipped their armor. I think that I can convince my party to hold the line, if nothing else. We owe you at least that much for making it possible again to openly talk about restoring Rappaport's law. Emily Rappaport's law, that was, but Caroline didn't mind sharing her name with such a visionary. One needed only to look west to the Alleghenies to see the consequences of intermarriage with Muggles, or, dishearteningly, to Caroline's own generation. Just as it was necessary to separate rarefied elements from the dross in order to transmute lead to gold, so too did a people need to be pure for their ennoblement. Even I had thought that it was a lost cause, Caroline admitted, and that at least the marriages which already existed would have to be grandfathered under new laws, and we would have to content ourselves with banning new unions. But Britain has become our North Star. If you could terminate mixed marriages so efficiently, then we surely can do the same.
If you truly admire our achievements,
Riddle said,
then I counsel you to recognize the whole recipe of our accomplishments. Separation from Muggles is only one part of it. Recognizing the common cause of all magical beings is the other.
Right. Give a wizard a fish and he would eat for a day. Give a werewolf a fish and he would never cease to vote for the right party. The principle would hold just as well for hags if only they could vote. I understand you completely.
Then see that the rest of your party does as well. I've heard many things about your party's candidate for the other consul's chair. That Julian Cannonbelly is temperamental, that he is prone to flights of vengeful fancy, that he killed a fellow senator.
It was a sanctioned duel, Caroline interrupted. She wasn't particularly happy about it either. It had been so messy, and some people didn't like duels anyway, and every vote counted. But the fact of the matter was that it had been 100% legal. Everything was legal in New Sweden. And if she never had to explain this to another soul again, it would be too soon.
Be that as it may, are you sure that you can control him?
Cannonbelly will be 107% under my control, Caroline assured Riddle. He has the enthusiasm of a dog, and all the wits as well. That's why my people supported him through the nomination process. I know that Cannonbelly talks a big game about the Sasquatches, but I have the photographs to prove that he's a secret Sassophile. He was also, Caroline was pretty certain about this, an honest-to-Jackson closet Grindelwaldist. Sure, he might stop short of advocating that wizards break the statute of secrecy, at least in public, but he still wanted to withdraw from the Peking Convention in order to legalize using the Imperius Curse on Muggles. He's going to bark and lunge, but my hand is on his leash, and I can pull his fangs out if I have the need. Riddle said nothing. In the meantime, Caroline resumed, I'm limited in what I can do while I'm second consul, and my opposite number belongs to the other party. But I can bring a few vampires onto my staff as another sign of good faith. I'll have to be circumspect about it until the election is over, obviously, Caroline added. Most of my party respect a vampire's right to work in any profession that they choose, but the consulate is the highest office in the country. That will be just a little too far for some of my supporters. Not for her, though. Caroline could trust vampires. She knew where she stood with them. On the other side of the room, preferably, and with a nice sunlit window between her and them, sure, but they were reliable, civilized beings. Besides, who else was going to represent her in court? Only a vampire could live long enough to master every clause of the Commonwealth's winding legal code. British goblins might have the rudiments of civilization, but some vampires had the real deal.
I will pass your assurances on to the Wizengamot, but do not be surprised if further signs of good faith are called for.
Riddle rose from his seat, and Caroline stood with him.
My first portkey homeward will depart tomorrow afternoon. You can reach me at my home in St. Christopher's if you have need of me before then.
Caroline hoped that she did not look as surprised as she felt. St. Christopher's? Really? She knew for a fact that somebody had arranged for better lodgings, but Caroline only nodded and shook his hand in farewell. If this is the last time we meet for some time, please convey my condolences to Minister Fudge's family.
I will.
Might I inquire who the new minister will be?
Unfortunately, we will both have to wait until the Wizengamot has vetted on the matter.
Caroline held back a befuddled laugh, but some of her astonishment bled through. But surely you know.
Madam, you mistake me for a puppeteer. Notwithstanding that I have a seat on the Wizengamot as the headmaster of our humble school, I am hardly a politician anymore.
He had to be joking. You're here, aren't you? Had his body shifted? Had his shoulders shrugged?
Perhaps I am assigned to special tasks, it is true.
Surely you must have a hint, at least, Caroline said. And she winced at the sound of her words, which were so close to begging. The black shape moved in place, and the eyeless mask seemed to regard her.
It is my hope, and not my prophecy, that the Wizengamot will elect Dolores Umbridge.
Umbridge, Caroline said, tensing the name. It rang awfully familiar to her ears. I met her at some point when I came to the tournament, didn't I? Right, that toad woman. Not a very pleasant witch, Caroline remarked.
I'm surprised that you didn't get along better. She shares your, how did you put it, commitment to continuous self-improvement.
Well, I only mean that she didn't seem to be particularly charismatic, Caroline said. We don't need a minister who inspires her country, Riddle said as he fetched a pinch of flu powder from atop the mantle.
We need a minister who supports our country, and who supports its laws.
A minister who will listen to you, Caroline suggested. His mask tilted, or was that a nod?
Good day, Consul,
he said. And he flung his pinch of powder into the fire and stepped through. Fornication, she cussed, just as soon as he was gone. Before the ashes had even settled in her fireplace, Caroline opened the upper left drawer of her desk and poured out a shot of Peter Luke's patented ashwinder oil. There was a knock on the door as she gagged it down, and then Caroline's aide-de-camp, Poppy Drailblossom, stumbled into the office. How did the meeting with, him go? Poppy stammered. It went well. He wants us to do more, and I'll satisfy him with less, Caroline said, but Poppy didn't seem any happier. What are you worried about, Poppy?
I just, don't think that it's trim to tie ourselves to his mast, Poppy said.
Some of his recent comments to the ICW were very hostile.
I know Riddle's type, Poppy. I know it because I'm forged from the same steel. He's gonna bark and swash, but he knows where the line lies, and he won't cross it.
But what if he does, Caroline? The British government just entered Argentina into the Treaty of Dresden, and I heard that the North Venetians are conducting talks with the British too. Good for them. I've always thought that East Venice was full of swine. Maybe they'll think twice about threatening an embargo.
You aren't worried about being pulled into a conflict in the Adriatic Sea?
Who will we be fighting? It will be over before we even organized a fighting force.
Why do you think the British are begging all those little statelets into the Treaty of Dresden, Poppy? It looks impressive on paper, and that shores up public support, but none of them have a grievance with anyone that matters.
What about the Wizarding Roman Republic?
Just a lot of little statelets that feel jumped up because they have a name in common, Caroline said. You're missing the point, which is that we need to secure our future, and this is the way to do it. You can't build peace on hope, but you can darn well build one on fear. The more of us there are, the more we can throw our weight around in the ICW without worrying about all the little things that seem to be keeping you up at night.
But what if he makes a mistake?
Caroline resisted the urge to roll her eyes. It was such a plebeian gesture. People like us don't make mistakes, Poppy. We plot our approach, we read our fornicating arithmetic formulae, and then we do the masterful thing. When my great-aunt Sylvia had been consul for 2 terms, and the popular Unitarians began to sink, she'd already smelled blood in the water and joined the Unitarian populists. And they kept her as consul for another 6 years. Even Emily Rappaport had to spend half a term as just another fornicating senator again before she got another chance at the consulate. Do you think that Sylvia Rappaport got to be consul for 18 consecutive years by making mistakes?
My uncle was a senator, Poppy said, completely missing the point as usual. A darn good one, too.
Caroline couldn't see the pout that she heard in Poppy's voice because she had tipped her head back to squeeze a couple of drops of clarified euphrasia into each eye. 1, 2 on the left.
Yes, Poppy, everyone loves your uncle.
1, 2 on the right.
But he's still just another senator, and he's never going to be consul.
I'm worried about what our own people might do, too, Poppy admitted. Maybe Riddle won't, cross the line. But what if Cannonbelly pushes him over it?
Shut up! Caroline groaned. And she reached for the half-empty bottle of spicy tobacco liqueur under her desk. She normally didn't drink until 8 o'clock, but talking about her party's nominee for the other consulate always exhausted her. Just the other day, somebody had sent over a memo from his office that calculated how many muggles the government could enthrall without noticeably inflating the normal disappearance rate. That was going too far, in Caroline's opinion. It was bad enough that she had to see a muggle every now and then when she crossed the street. She didn't want one in her house. At least she didn't need to talk with him until he returned from New Mexico next week. We've got him handled. Well, I'm going to be first consul. I'll be able to keep him in line.
And for as long as Caroline remained the senior partner of their duumvirate, she would stay first consul.
I'll put him in charge of renegotiating the trade deal with Antarctica. That'll keep him busy for a few months.
Caroline didn't understand Poppy's worries about Cannonbelly, except insofar as she understood that Poppy was an incessant worrier,
Everything that Caroline had to know about Julian Cannonbelly, she knew from his name, his last name, his cognomen, he liked to call it, but really, he used to be Comfund, which had the pleasant-sounding connotation of a camp hound, nicely loyal and reliable and trusting. But he belonged to a more radical wing of the party and gone and Latinized it, badly Latinized it, if Caroline knew anything at all. Caroline was pretty sure that Julian should have called himself Canum Castra or something like that. Castra Canis? It didn't matter. The point was that Cannonbelly was a reliable fool. But then, weren't most dogs? And the public loved them anyway. Or tolerated them or something. Dumb, mangy beasts, to say nothing of dogs. Honestly, what is Cannonbelly even thinking talking about Muggle servants? If he pressed a button and a Muggle came, Poppy, how long would it take for a Muggle to get me a drink? Poppy might not know the first thing about chances, but she could do sums and time things out. Her provisions were stored in the general larder, which is 3 floors below us, and we're 400 feet from the lift, so 5 minutes? Jesus, goes that long. And a Muggle would have to touch it, wouldn't they? Cannonbelly knows how filthy they are, doesn't he? Caroline asked. They have to rub at their filth with water and congealed fats and the skeletons of sessile animal vegetables. Did you know that? Some of them wipe at their filth with little sheets of parchment, too, or worse, cloths, which they wash with more water and fats. She shuddered and resisted the urge to tap her hands with a scouring charm. If she did that every time she thought about things, and then it wouldn't be long before her hands were red and raw. But really, what was wrong with Cannonbelly? Just give me today's newspaper, Caroline said. Poppy did so, then sat in a chair opposite the desk and fussed with her hands while Caroline read and drank. The first few pages were pleasant, a couple of her old school friends successfully expanding into another industry, an embarrassing scandal about a senator and a botched whiskey enema that Caroline would have found amusing even if he hadn't been a member of the other party. Nevertheless, a feeling of unease began to form in her gut and grew as she turned each page. It finally justified itself when she reached the section that she'd been anticipating and dreading in equal measure. 7 1/8 daily political arithmancy. Measured by Prognosticus Dragut. Fornication! Caroline snarled and shoved the article across the desk to Poppy. She slapped it for emphasis, and maybe because she just wanted to slap something. Did you see this, Poppy? I thought you would be pleased, Poppy said. Did you actually read this feculent turd? We're just an iota ahead in Dracket's projection. We're still ahead, Poppy replied. Look at the outcome matrix, Poppy. 51% doesn't mean that we're going to get 51% of the vote. It means that we have a coin's flip chance to win. Would you stake your life on the flip of a coin? Caroline turned back to the article, gritting her teeth and staring at the figures as if she could change them by force of will. My kingdom for an advisor who understands the doctrine of chances, she muttered. Your kingdom, ma'am? Asked Poppy, sounding more concerned than she'd been even while discussing Riddle and Cannonbelly. Caroline sighed. It's just an expression, Poppy. Some British theater wizard had... Oh, forget it. Hail to the Commonwealth. Hail to the Commonwealth, Poppy replied, seemingly satisfied. And then all of her attention returns to the matter that actually mattered. Perhaps Dragut is wrong, she suggested. Arithmetic uncertainty is just as likely to work against us as it is to work in our favor. Maybe even more likely if it were possible. All of the cornerstones of an electoral projection were against them. It would be only the 5th time in the Commonwealth's history that a single party held both consulates. People liked it when the consulates were divided, because then the consuls were forced to negotiate and compromise with each other. Never mind that the process mostly just produced sawdust for the mill. Her party was running uphill this year, darn it. Fornicating citizenry. The more she thought about it, the less she wondered why the Romans decided to appoint an emperor. It was the best idea that they'd ever had. Once Poppy had left, Caroline drew out a book of parchment slips to write an exchange note. Best to get it over with before she forgot. Quill in hand, Caroline frowned as she forced herself through another of the countless indignities to which she had condescended. as another show of good faith for Riddle, she had started paying Barbaro, her personal house elf. That had bothered both Caroline and Barbaro, but Poppy had spent a couple of days explaining the situation. It was one of those little exercises that his master had to perform in order to prove her sincerity to the strange man across the ocean, and Barbaro would really do her a disservice if this didn't work out. And now he only cried a little when payday came. She looked forward to putting an end to that after the election, but until then she had this miserable exercise to look forward to every week. Or perhaps, Caroline thought, she would maintain the compromise for a little longer. She would be up for re-election in another 3 years, and if Riddle's support was good enough to secure a first term for Ken and Belly, then it would probably be good enough to secure a second term for a political maven like Caroline Rappaport. And from there, who knew? Emily Rappaport had gotten a month named after her, before those fornicating optimists in the Unitarian Populist Party repealed Rappaport's law and renamed her month Tredecember. Well, Caroline would return Emily's month to her, that was certain, maybe 2 months for the trouble, and Caroline would convince the Senate to give her a month of her own, too. Carol had a nice ring to it. Maybe she could fit it between April and Josie. Caroline fingered an ivory button on her collar, and immediately there appeared Barbaro, with a cold glass bottle of Coca Fizzle Plus, half the sugar, twice the cocaine, hovering beside him. She took the bottle and leaned it toward Barbaro, who popped it open with a snap of his fingers, then held the uncapped rim beneath her nose to inhale its sweet, alchemical odor. Just smelling it made her feel better. "You can get Barbaro," she said. He was gone as soon as his name passed her lips. And she tore open a little mesh baggie of fairy dust and crushed citrine, and poured the contents into her coca fizzle. It sparkled, it shimmered, and it sibilated. And then the mixture softened to gentle yellow tones and a soft crackle that was almost too faint to hear. Caroline took a long sip, and then she was on top of the world again. "Hail Rappaport," Caroline whispered to the empty room, and she smiled.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the Archive of Our Own page of Call Me Saltisidae. The music is Amon Ra by Dayswitch under a Creative Commons license with assistance from 1T1. If you would like to commission me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Patreon page, to which I hope you consider subscribing to support me, and my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.